fuck are we talking about?
Okay, so
talking about monkeys.
Okay, so let's
start.
Where are you going? Who are you going with?
Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it. I left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live. Talking about HR with the people who know something about it. So let's get to our guest, Matthew Charney. Welcome to Drive Through HR 2014.
Hey, new year, same stuff, right?
Well, there you have it, folks. Good talk. We'll see you tomorrow. Oh, I'm sorry. That was Alabama. We'll see you next year. My bad.
Hey, you got to be able to take it if you dish it out. So that's fair. It's fair.
That's true. But of all the teams, we'll talk a little sports here for a second. So of all the teams, I love to get the air, the dander up of Oklahoma being here when they eke out a loss. Right, not a win, a loss, because then people, you have a month of rationalizations, and it's awesome, and I don't get that this year. Everybody's all happy, and it's not what I was prepared for, quite frankly. So I'm dealing with some change issues.
Hey, I'll tell you what, their young quarterback looked good. I mean, first of all, you know, you shouldn't, no fan, I mean, we're all fans. I mean, respectively, Brian's a fan of Nebraska, and Matt's a fan of USC, and I'm a fan of Alabama. All three wonderful programs. We've all had highs and lows. So the thing is as fans, you can't have the expectation. It is an unreasonable expectation that you win every game. You win every national championship. That you just, it's unreasonable. We have... The three of us have crazy expectations of our teams, whereas if you win 10 games in a season, somehow that's a letdown. All three of us have that. I mean, with our respective programs. But, you know, the thing is Alabama didn't look good in all against the Auburn Tigers. They didn't look good last night against Oklahoma, and they deserve to lose. The better teams in both cases won, and whether or not I like that or not, no, it'll suck. Until spring ball, it'll suck, and I'll follow all the recruiting news, and I'll hope that they get better. But truth is, as we were talking about in pre-show, sometimes a loss can be really good for your program. And we're not under academic sanctions. We're not any of that. And none of that, there's no clouds over the program. And because Saban just signed another extension, and he's not going to go to Texas, I'm not fearful that we're going to lose our coach or anything like that. So, actually, I think it's going to be a good loss. I think he'll probably internalize it. He's that type of guy where he'll spend the next 6 months of his life trying to figure out how to stop the up-tempo offense, which is probably really good for us because we can stop the standard, you know, the slogging it out offices like LSU, but the up-tempo stuff gives us fits. And you saw that with both Auburn and Oklahoma last night. But I think Oklahoma, you know, I actually, different from Brian, I actually like Oklahoma, and I like Coach Stoops. So whether or not I don't live in Oklahoma, so I don't have to deal with a lot of their fan base, but I do like them. But they won. Better team won last night.
Yeah, I actually like, the funny thing is, I actually like Stoops in the program. It's just, it's saturation, you know. Whew, saturation.
Fair enough.
I always do stir things up, and every once in a while, TU will make them feel bad about something, not often. So, but good segue. Speaking of recruiting, Matt Charney, what are some trends in recruiting you see coming that nobody else has any idea is just going to slap them in the face?
So I think that the biggest trend that I see coming up in the year in recruiting, and this isn't really, anything new, but I think that certainly there seems to be a lot more focus around it, is the fact that that certainly I think that recruiting, from a corporate perspective anyway, is becoming more and more of a decentralized function. And as they continue to roll out, a plethora of social referral tools, as well as, kind of get the social recruiting programs and random masterships, all that stuff has been kind of up and running for a couple of years now. What I really think we're going to start seeing a shift in is I think that companies, a lot of the larger enterprises certainly have, 80,000 applicants a year, all the way to 1.2 million, I think, in the case of Google, I recently read. People applying to those companies a year. And I think that what we're really going to start to see is less looking at new lead generation, which tends to be the traditional focus. So, generate new candidates, new leads, stick them in the system, and then recreate the wheel every time. What I really think that we're going to start seeing is that most of that activity is going to start shifting and occurring within the company, and the focus is going to move from generating new leads to building out and developing the ones that are already in the database. So really, I think from a sourcing and candidate development perspective, I think it's going to move from lead generation to lead nurturing and engagement this year. And I think that as much emphasis has been put on tools and technology, I really see a lot of companies starting to look at, old school best practices, things like, contact campaigns. How do you start a conversation? How do you script an employee value proposition? You see that, certainly with the EVPs that are coming out of a lot of the CRM add-ons. So I think that's a really kind of a big shift in mindset as I talk to people, is really that kind of employee self-service from an external recruiting perspective and developing the internal capabilities to develop the leads that they've already built. And that's obviously from a kind of corporate talent acquisition perspective, but that really seems to be a lot of the tenor of the dialogue. Outside of that, that led a lot to a sick world of dedicated sourcers.
Well, at some point you've got to recognize, do we need to outsource recruiting or do we need to build it internally? And what you've just described is someone that's made the decision, a CEO, CHRO, VP of Talent Acquisition, et cetera, that has said, yes, we're going to get great at this, not be good, not be mediocre, but we're going to get great at this. And then how do you do that? And a lot of what you're saying is what marketing has done in a lot of ways, that when you don't outsource marketing, then you get good at it. You figure out how to get vertically, completely vertically integrated. You get great at marketing all the way down to sourcing your own prospects and then all of the different things through that process. But let's go back up for a second. Point where you either decide to get great at something or you don't, and therein lies when should you outsource and when should you not? Because what you and I, or all three of us, really encounter is a lot of mediocrity, and that's what we really talk a lot about is the mediocre and the average, and if someone's going to be truly great at that, whether or not they do it internally or externally. How they make that decision on should they outsource and should they not. Matt, what do you see as the trends in terms of at that point when you make the decision, we're going to go all in, we're going to build it, and we're going to get great at it, or we're never really going to be great at recruiting. Let's go find a partner, and let's pay them to be great at recruiting.
Yeah, so I think that so I had the chance to attend back in November, the HRO Today Summit in London. And the RPO industry and the HRO MSP providers, they're actually losing quite a lot of those huge accounts where it's a fully integrated, fully outsourced kind of function. And the general consensus there was that they're tending towards specialization. So, we're able to develop employer branding for you. We're able to build sourcing candidate pipelines for you. But those giant, embedded kind of MSP sort of arrangements that's, a couple years, couple million dollars, those are going by the wayside. And so what I think is really interesting is that trend towards specialization, speaks to the point that you can do a lot of individual things well, but to be able to cover the gamut, as so many companies and recruiters try to do, from having deep expertise in systems to deep expertise in branding to deep expertise in HR compliance is really sort of an unreasonable ask. So it's really, I think, a matter of determining from a cost per hire perspective as well as an efficacy perspective which of those capabilities you want to have in-house and which you want to partner with, and get that external expertise. But I see the trend away from completely taking recruiting as an outsourced function. And then the companies that are traditionally, I would say, would be good targets for RPOs. Those are like, the really high growth companies. We're doubling our headcount every year, kind of the Silicon Valley style companies. They're actually seem increasingly to be relying on a lot of the technology solutions that are popping up, from search aggregators to social referral programs to kind of other SaaS solutions, and really making and optimizing their internal processes so they can do it in-house. So the highest growth companies, which is traditionally, I think, the ones that rely on RPO, are actually building the capabilities from at least a technology perspective to do it in-house, and I think that that's probably bad news for the big RPO providers who don't have a clearly differentiated expertise or value prop.
Can we be great at recruiting if we don't have the C-suite's buy-in?
Yes. Depending on the structure of the company, because I think that ultimately the CEO seems to be, HR doesn't talk about seat at the table or whatever cliche you want to throw at that. But I do think that disconnect is still there. So I think that the CEO, while they talk about talent acquisition being their biggest problem, I just don't see that they have a very active hand in the recruitment process. And I think certainly at the bigger companies that have different departments and functions, the corporate culture, the hiring profiles, methodologies are so decentralized that really it's the line executives who have the much bigger say in talent acquisition than the consolidated C-suite.
All right, Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot. Competency first or culture first, and why?
I think it's still very much competency. I would argue for culture, but I think that culture tends to be amorphous because, again, the only company with a unified corporate culture has one person. It's one of those dynamic concepts that really depends on where you sit. So, for example, at Disney, Pixar has a completely different corporate culture than ESPN or even ABC, on the network side. So I think that it really, at a large enterprise-style company, the culture is so variable that you can't hire from that from a centralized talent acquisition group. So I think that competencies are important. I think that in looking at hiring for competencies, it's really, we need to make a shift away from what skills do they have that we can plug in right now to fulfill this very specific and niche job to looking at the competencies that are existing that can be developed or flexed or in some way adjusted for future development, succession planning, and actually growing within the company, rather than just hiring for a very tightly defined role.
Dwayne Lay via the Twitters asked the question, what's the difference between recruiting and recruitment?
Tense.
And that's it.
Class.
All right. Richard Sherman asks, prediction, RE, candidate lead gen shift from actual relationship development means lift in quality communication. So back to what you were talking about, lead gen and how we follow up with people, et cetera. Is this going to make us better at communicating with folks on kind of a one-to-one basis?
Yes, I absolutely think it is. And I just wrote a post on this, shameless pitch, it's on recruitingblog.com. Please check it out. I think that finding people is easy. It has just become so easy that a caveman could do it. Anyone can go on Facebook and find any sort of information. Google has obviously, become a lot more personalized in terms of experience and connection. So I don't think that the generation part is hard. That's the hard part. Now, what is hard is actually creating engagement opportunity, because if you're finding those people on any platform, chances are your competitors are too. That's where I think companies are getting into a lot of trouble, is because now they're not only easy to find, you have these CRM tools, these mass messaging tools that really, I would say, commoditize that communication. And I think that the companies that are going to have the best advantage in getting the talent that they want are going to be able to personalize those approaches and really work on building relationships that aren't around a specific job opportunity, but rather getting to know them on a personal basis. And that's why I think, you know, certainly social media is so cool, because not because you can tweet a job and, you know, you can get 1,500 applications, but because when you search for these people, you also find out a bit of the personal. And you know, William, knowing that, you know, you're a Bama fan, I could easily find that on your social profile. There's a better chance that I'm going to connect with you around Tide football than I am around recruiting in HR if I were to ping you. And I think that really that needs to be reframed from this data science enabled by technology that recruiting has become to much more of a behavioral science that's dictated by well-crafted communication, messaging, and personalization.
What do you think about the concept of kind of hyper-local? You know, for example, IT jobs in Ireland, things becoming small, big data, big cloud, we don't really know what it is, but the tendency to make things really small. What do you think about that in terms of recruitment?
Obviously, recruitment's like real estate, right? And location is everything. That said, you give a good example of IT in Ireland. And what companies in Ireland do, actually, is a lot of the talent that they're recruiting are for multinationals. So, you know, obviously Twitter, Facebook, Google, all the Silicon Valley players have pretty big presences in Ireland. But what they do is they'll take staff from countries like India, right, and they'll actually use Ireland as a training facility to immerse them in Western culture prior to then expatriating them to the U.S., which is what often happens. So it's kind of, you know, culturally a way to adjust and develop and grow their talent before throwing them into the frying pan of this weird, you know, dog-eats-dog American corporate culture that we live in. And so I think that, you know, I actually see the trend away from that hyper-localization, because I think that the globalization that you know, the companies that are doing the most hiring obviously experience, plus the fact that the talent is truly a global phenomenon and more mobile and connected than ever, I think that localization matters less than being able to have the flexibility to adjust to a specific market or need. But I think it doesn't matter where people sit as much anymore in terms of targeting recruitment. It's much more about the skills they have and the connections that they've built.
All right, so the relationship between recruiting and HR is interesting, just as the relationship between marketing and sales. And in different organizations, marketing is actually tucked under sales. Very few do you have the CMO that also runs sales, but I'm sure that probably exists as well at some places. Should recruiting, in your mind, be separate from HR, meaning not reporting back up through HR?
I really think that depends on the company and the size of the recruiting team. You have a company like Microsoft, I would say that, you know, where you have variables where you have different divisions, different teams, different countries, different programs, half is contingent, half is, you know, in-house from a talent pool perspective, then obviously it needs to go through HR just because there are so many compliance issues and complexities related to that. That said, I think that the SMB companies and certainly startups, it makes a lot more sense for recruitment to report up through marketing because you don't have those compliance issues to deal with. There's often a lot less formalized processes or legacy systems in place. And so most of the activities that we call, you know, sourcing, employer branding are really, you know, lead generation and brand awareness campaigns. So I think that makes a lot more sense to report up through marketing. And again, I think that the marketing already departments generally already have the expertise for lead scoring, segmenting, communications, and conversion that HR obviously doesn't, because I think HR tends to be much more focused on process and sort of, you know, more of those traditional competencies. I think that those are the things that actually are much more easily outsourced than recruiting. And I think that until an outsourced recruiter can answer honestly the question, what's it like to actually work there, they lose a whole lot of veracity unless they're embedded within that organization, because you just don't know if you can't accurately represent a company or a culture as an outsourced recruiter, in my opinion.
What's overhyped? What would you like to kill off in 2014 and have us not talk about ever again?
I'd like us to never talk about candidate experience again, because it's so fundamentally easy to fix in my opinion, and but it's never going to be. And I'd like for us to stop talking about mobile, social, and all this platform is worth blah 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 blah. I think that people focus way too much on mediums and the nuances of those mediums in the conversation around recruiting, where it's really all about messaging. I'd also like for us to not talk about big data, because while it's this really cool phenomenon, I also think that it's a Quixotian tilting at windmills to think that the average recruiter, who obviously is unlikely to even be able to know their average cost per hire or, time to fill or even source of hire, that suddenly they're going to turn around and become, dedicated data scientists. I think that's an absurd proposition.
So if you were hired, you just got a gig, you got to run recruiting, talent acquisition at a company, what are your must-have technologies, sourcing, recruiting technologies? You don't have to show for the vendors or anything, but even the types of technologies. If you went in and they had absolutely nothing, what are the types of technologies or technologies in particular that you would have to have?
I would start with a marketing automation system or a CRM that has a lot of different plugins and options. For example, like a Salesforce or a HubSpot, they have a whole partner ecosystem. So, not only are you those systems basically able to function like an ATS, they'll have OSCCP compliance plugins for auditing documentation. So the first thing that I would do is get a marketing automation system in place that functions like a CRM, or figure out a way to tap into the system marketing already has in place and develop a configuration that's going to work specifically for recruiting. And I would use that system as my primary point of contact for everything from segmentation to analytics, because they're so much further advanced than HR-specific solutions. And again, I think that from a best practice perspective, there's a definite merger between those two when it comes to both process and execution.
So a buddy of yours from college takes on his first recruiting position. What advice do you give him in terms of what to read, how to behave, what to do, what conferences to attend? What's your advice to your buddy for his or her first recruiting position?
I think that my advice is you don't need to know recruiting in order to be a good recruiter. And I think that's a fallacy that a lot of people, myself even, when I started, make, is, I have to know everything about the industry. Read the Wall Street Journal. Read, trade publications. Know what's going on in the economy. Know what's going on with business. Know what's going on with industries. And know what's going on with the function that you're recruiting for. Think business, and the recruiting will come easy because you can have a conversation around the things that are most meaningful for candidates. So, for instance, I graduated with a screenwriting degree and popped into a finance recruiting job, and all I consumed for years were things like Bloomberg and Forbes and Fortune and Wall Street Journal, and things that I would never in a million years know. But as a result, was able to talk about GAAP and IFRS and other things that would bore the average individual to death. And I think that really that's a much more successful way to connect than knowing recruiting, because all recruiting is the ability to build a connection and trust in order to make that person think, okay, this is the type of person I want to work with. I really think that's what it comes down to.
What do you think Glassdoor plays in the ecosystem of employer branding?
I think that Glassdoor is the most exciting technology that's really come around. I think that it's not only going to erode LinkedIn's market share, because traditionally, I think the companies – are going to LinkedIn to employer brand pages, and that tends to be a default in addition to the career site. I think Glassdoor is really well positioned to come in and really steal a lot of that business because it's a realistic portrayal of what it's like to work at a company. And while employers certainly brand themselves, ultimately that conversation is democratized. And I think we've gone from the earlier days where it's easy to dismiss a few negative reviews and results to being able to look at companies that have 5,000, 10,000, reviews, and while a few may be disgruntled, you definitely, I think that they portray realistically, you start seeing trends, and I think that it's a really effective reporting mechanism, and I think from a branding perspective, it not only can either be a detriment or, an asset to a company, but it really forces accountability, and I think that as it gains prominence and market share, it also forces companies to listen to their employees in a way that they have not been able to before. They're not building these surveys and questions, or people don't know that HR is necessarily reading them. So I think that it's definitely creating a much more honest and open dialogue, and I can't wait to see what they do this year.
So I want to get your take on LinkedIn's recruiter product. On one hand, it's market dominant. Everyone uses it. On the other hand, you hear a lot of people that are really more or less upset about the pricing than some of the features and attributes of the product. Do you think there's going to be a backlash to that product in particular if and when someone comes out with a better WYSIWYG?
I think that there already is a backlash to that, and I'm hearing it a lot. I think, again, it is market prevalent. It's at a price point that doesn't make sense. And unless LinkedIn revokes its APIs and pulls and completely scales back its SEO, which is one of its biggest assets, then their public profiles are already so visible that, to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to buy that product when you can simply find that same information and then go to a much cheaper tool to find out, that person's digital footprint and that accordingly. So I do think that LinkedIn probably is going to be moving much more into usage as a sales and business development tool from a focus because I think that they can't grow their recruiting market much more at the price point that they're charging for the functionality that they're giving.
So, Matt, we got about 2 minutes and 19 seconds left. My last question for the show, and thank you for coming on, is how does big data actually help recruiting for the typical practitioner?
I think that if done properly, what it can do is identify actual metrics to be able to point to efficacy and know what's working and what's not. And also, be able to allow for a more proper adjudication of spend because obviously recruiting budgets are very tight. So rather than throw dollars at things that have, you don't necessarily know if they're working from a source of hire perspective, I think that certainly it does help inform that. And I also think that it identifies areas of opportunities for succession planning, pipeline building, workforce management, and that sort of thing. So I think that really the value of that data is in trend analysis and identifying outcomes and helping to build strategies rather than, giving this complex look into the actual workforce and the company and the business, blah, 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 blah. I think that we're looking at it very broadly, whereas, in fact, the reporting capabilities are really the biggest advantage that the big data brings to the situation.
Perfect. Well, thank you for coming on. Great to hear your voice in 2014. Tell people where they can connect up with you, and then we're going to roll on out for the week.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter, at Matt Charney. Search for my name in LinkedIn, or visit my blog at recruitingblogs.com. So thank you very much for having me on, and appreciate your time.
Perfect. Folks, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.